traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, a podcast to promote and improve your practice as an athletic trainer. I am talking with Jim Mackey, 50 years in the profession of athletic training. What an incredible amount of knowledge and experience. Jim is working with the Jackson Sports Med and talking about youth sports safety update. So this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/youth sports safety. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/youth sports safety. So Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me this morning.
50 years, and in your bio, you put CPR instructor, and we mentioned just before we got on air, you're 71, 50 plus years in the profession. Have you ever had to perform CPR?
Yes, I have. Had a coach literally drop dead at the goal line after a game. I could go into that whole story, but yes, unfortunately, as I was running down the field, there were several nurses that were parents, and they started immediately. And that was my biggest fear was looking up and seeing the fire truck driving off and away after the game. And that always a good note to have them stick around 5 or 10 minutes after. And this was in our pre AED days too. So, I mean, they had it, but we didn't have it. And so unfortunately it was a sad outcome, but the result was it inspired the purchase of a lot of AEDs for the future at the school. I think that was the school I was working at. They started out with 1 or 2. I got 1 through the hospital, and then we ended up with about 9 at the school. So, you know, good things come out of tragedy sometimes.
And that's interesting. You know, we recently implemented the medical timeout and that kind of thing, but I've never really thought about saying, hey, can y'all make sure y'all stay around until this clears out? So I need to check with our district admin and say, hey, can we just add this onto the ambulance? Because we have ambulance at all the varsity football games, but that's a really good, you know, idea just to just wait.
Say goodbye before y'all leave. Stay around 5 minutes. You never know what will happen afterwards. And that's just a good principle. But medical timeout has been wonderful and implemented here. So we'll go from there.
Fantastic. All right. So talking about youth sports safety, I know they had some sort of like state policy ranking, and like North Carolina was like way up at the top. And I think Sam Scarnio was working on that. And something like that. So we're not specifically talking about the high school or the UIL type policies. We're talking about youth sports safety. What does the scene look like there in Florida and then also across the country for youth sports safety?
I will say we're proud of it in Florida through the KSI, in that Florida was ranked number 1 based upon the policies. And sadly, a lot of those policies got created out of tragic events. And that concussion law got out of that. The Zach Martin Act for heat, cold water immersion, AEDs, emergency action plans came out of a tragedy. But youth sports safety in the club level and the travel teams and all that stuff, I think those are just areas that need a lot more attention. And hopefully we can address those. Our primary focus has kind of been, it has been in the school system. We created a program here, Project 17. Bob Sefcik, our executive director with the Jacksonville Sports Medicine Program, was very instrumental in creating what we call Project 17, which placed 17 full-time certified athletic trainers in our Duval County Public Schools. So that was good for that. And the private schools are seem to be pretty well taken care of. But these youth sports, Pop Warner, other things that are, I hate to use the word uncovered, but they're uncovered by certified athletic trainers. For the most part, we just need to continue to grow our profession and do what we can. The clinics seem to do a pretty good outreach to some of those groups, the soccer clubs and things like that. But there's always room for improvement. Let's put it that way.
So what do you feel like has been like a big barrier? I worked a club volleyball tournament, you know, and so they have EMTs that are there because the site requires EMTs. So it's a convention center, but then the company employ or pays me as a contract athletic trainer because they value the injury, you know, taking care of the athlete. What have you found as some of the bigger barriers for those club and youth sports organizations?
I think the barriers would be the challenge of communication. That's where the medical timeout comes in, or just pre-planning, where you sit down with those various groups and what are they looking for? What services you provide as a certified athletic trainer? What will be the EMS response? What's the emergency action planning for that venue and event? And so overcoming any of those perceived barriers that could be there, because as we say, you don't want to meet all those people for the first time when there's a crisis going on. So, and it's getting those organizations to see the value of we need to sell ourselves, our value as athletic trainers, that this is important. Medical healthcare professional to be on site. And then not a turf war of who's in charge, but who's going to respond. And, you know, even as the NFL learned, when they had a crisis, one of the biggest things they learned is somebody needs to be the lead point person in a crisis and things like that. So identifying that person in advance and moving that forward is very helpful to just having a smooth, safe operation.
So what are some of the things that the practical ways that you've been able to communicate, or you've seen the people there in Florida communicate, hey, this is why you need an athletic trainer. This is what we would do, things like that to jump over those hurdles.
Well, to expand statewide is a big process. Couple things. One thing Bob has created and worked with physician groups with throughout the state is it's called the Florida Alliance for Sports Medicine, and it's FASMED, and it's various groups around the state that can help us to communicate that message. So we obviously can't do it all alone, but these are very high visibility sports medicine practices, physician groups, orthopedic groups that can get the message out. So that's what Bob is trying to work on. Go back to the high school situation, but they were able to redesign the screening forms and the concussion forms and things like that that needed to be addressed to get up to standards. And those standards at the high school level will kind of trickle down to the club sports and things like that. I'd say education. We put on symposiums here to educate the public. We have people come from around the state for that. And then we try and put these courses online too, so they can get them. And I believe our sports medicine, our youth sports safety update podcast, we try and have people on there that can talk about these issues. And hopefully, as we grow these podcasts, they're designed for not only athletic trainers, but for coaches, physicians, parents, administrators. So we do a variety of topics, and that hopefully will help further educate. And maybe in the future we can come out. We produce some videos too, for example, cold water immersion and that. But getting it out, getting the word out, and that's the challenge. So we keep working on with that. And Bob Sefcik does a great job. He's really a one-man show at the Jacksonville Sports Medicine Program. I take care of some of the education and do the consulting and that. But he, along with the supervisor of athletic training in Duval County, they just do a great job of getting the word out locally. Now we're expanding more regionally and then within the state through FASMED.
All right. So the podcast you started in 2021, tell me a little bit more about that. Like you said, it was more or less for anybody involved in youth sports safety, maybe some of the interesting guests or maybe some of the feedback you've received from listeners.
Well, we've been fortunate let's say opportunistic at times to go to things. And for example, I got to go to the Andrews course here last year, and we got Dr. James Andrews. We got the team physician from the Baltimore Ravens. We had Kevin Wilk about rehab. We were able to interview several high-profile athletic trainers like Jim Madaleno from the University of Kentucky and the University of Alabama athletic trainer and University of Florida athletic trainer. So just people like that, as well as we had Dr. Jonathan Dresner, very leading cardiac specialist from Seattle, Washington. He was our featured speaker here with at the Jacksonville Sports Medicine Symposium this past spring. Jeff Ferguson, head athletic trainer, director of sports health with the Jaguars. People like that, Dr. Jennifer Maynard, excellent sports medicine physician with the Mayo family practice here. So a variety of people on a variety of topics, whether it be screening, physicals, ECG, the value of that, the value of preparation for sudden cardiac arrest, cold water immersion, Lori Giordano with the Zach Martin Foundation. So just a variety of people to get our topics are anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes max in that, and just designed for variety of people, variety of topics, and hopefully they've been helpful. We've gotten good feedback on them, but again, as with every podcast, there's a lot of things out there. So how do you make yours stand out and be exciting and be enlightening to the public?
Right. Have you had anybody say, "Hey, I was able to implement this because of your podcast," or "I was able to change the policy because of the podcast"?
Haven't gotten that feedback yet, but I'd love to hear that. I mean, I think when you talk to people, I talked to a very seasoned athletic trainer, and he's very complimentary about that. But other people, they want to get the word out too about what they're doing. The Jordan McNair Foundation, we talked with them, and so I think hopefully those podcasts have helped inspired people to do things. So you just don't always hear. Fortunately, we don't hear anything negative, so I guess that's good too. Yeah. And that, so hopefully that's helpful.
Right, so 50 years in the profession, like you said, you're over your 70 years old. You easily could have retired completely and just be going to church, playing golf, doing that kind of thing. What makes you choose to be involved with youth sports safety?
I just believe it's critical. I get upset when I see these, whether it's a TikTok or a Twitter, these little Pop Warner kids, they love to post, people love to post the kid just getting totally clobbered, and that we know that's just not safe. We're still facing cultural issues, or a better way to put it, when I say culture, that the toughness of sport culture, that type of thing, that those things are praised, and within coaching or within these parents that are out there, and you just kind of have to chip away, hopefully one at a time. But I've got grandkids that played sports, and I just want them to be safe when they're out there, and so I just think it's important. And yeah, I do play pickleball 3 times a week, but I enjoy that, and get out and do other things. I have a very flexible schedule these days. I kind of got off the field in 2017, but again, do a variety of things to continue to engage myself with parents and coaches and whoever will listen to the message. So.
So you're a spotter for the NFL with concussions. Like you said, you work with Jacksonville Sports Med. They also are highly involved with Jaguars and things like that. So it seems like you have a really good platform or position for having these conversations and possibly implementing change. How would you speak to somebody who is in a small town, East Texas, something like that, where there's no professional sports, there's no big clinic, but they want to possibly implement change in youth sports safety?
Yeah, I think I mean it was probably almost 20 or 30 years ago we started bringing in, for example, the fire and rescue people to visit with them, talk with them, learn from them. Again, the way you approach these things, it's not, I'm the athletic trainer, this is what I do and all that. Yes, you need to speak to your value, but you need to ask them, what do they do? What are their policies and procedures? We now have a very envious, exceptional relationship with the Jacksonville Fire and Rescue Department, which takes care of the whole county. And then some of the private ambulance companies that they want to share information, and we're wanting to get on the page with their protocols and learn from their experiences and their training and things like that. I think that's a valuable tool to, for any athletic trainer, small town, build that relationship in advance, during the off season with your fire and rescue people, with your hospital systems, where they're going to be going. I'm trying, for example, to implement a program to, you know, talk about equipment removal, for example, on the field. Trying to implement a program that I could go into the emergency rooms and work with their staff to train them, because for some of us, let's be real, the scariest part, once we send the athlete to the hospital, they're theirs. And they're probably not going to ask that athletic trainer to come in unless you know somebody to help with that equipment removal in a possible C-spine situation. So, you know, we can train those people. That's better. If you can practice your procedures you're going to have to practice your emergency procedures anyway, and you should do that routinely. So bring in your coaches, bring in your EMS people, just talk and build relationship. And yeah, there's struggles along the way. But you just shouldn't have any turf wars. If you go humbly in as an athletic trainer to build that relationship. So I hope that helps a little bit, but that's helped us. It's helped us with the medical timeout, getting them engaged with that. Some EMS crews are the same crew for every school. Some are different each week. So it gives that athletic trainer at least 5 minutes to proactively discuss situations and ask questions, not just lay out, this is how it's going to be done, because there are different laws in different states and that, but you can grow to work together and just build a good, we're a healthcare collaboration. I mean, I learned that 50 years ago from Chris Patrick. He built a great team at the University of Florida of physicians, whether it was the general practice, orthopedic, the dentist, the neurologist, the psychologist, all those people, pulling them all together, and they, so that when you have an issue, you can work together to solve that issue. So hope that helps a little bit.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit more about going into the ERs. How have you kind of done that? What does that look like? What has been the response been? And then, like, are you going and training them in their office? Are you having them come to the field? What does that look like?
Well, it's in the hybrid planning stage right now. I presented one proposal to our children's hospital, and we also have a level one trauma center here, which we have a pretty good relationship with. So, putting the word out to them, and then it's a program. It's a work in progress right now, but it's another step along the way that I think we can better educate and collaborate together. Because I was told in one hospital that nurses are taught about helmet removal, for example, but they don't see all these new different types of helmets or the different shoulder pads that are coming in. And now with lacrosse being a bigger sport, at least here in Florida, you know, those helmets and things like that, what's all involved in that? So we know the NFL practices these things extensively. So why can't we practice them, you know, at this level too? And so again, it's a work in progress. Hopefully it will have some legs to it, but, and I'm trying to get it done here in June and July so that we're ahead of the curve for the fall.
All right. So talk about some of the fun experiences or big wins that you've had in dealing with youth sports safety.
Oh, I thought you want to have me talk about the rings I've won. But, you know, I love to give this quote from Mark Richt that rings are nice, but they collect dust. It's the relationships that matter in life and that will last. So that's butchering his quote, but you get the point. Oh goodness, what victories in youth sports. I think let me just put it this way. I think having a parent listen to what you're saying, value what you're saying, and then as we seem to hear too many of the stories of all the frustrations that athletic trainers have in dealing with parents. And I did say to somebody, I think that's one of the hardest things we do have to deal with these days. But I've got for every one parent that was a negative experience, I've got 5 to 10 that thank you. They appreciated the direction they were given. So to me, those are little victories when a parent listens to you or appreciates what you're saying. And again, it's we have as athletic trainers, we have a, wear a lot of hats, but one thing we have to do is to learn how to communicate respectfully and humbly, but with our medical knowledge and with authority, and don't take it personal if it's not accepted. But I think as we grow in those skills, we bring on more people that will support our efforts and that hey, you need to listen to the athletic trainer or need to go talk to the athletic trainer so that they can help direct your child in a safe manner and put them in a safe position, a safe situation. Because I had a doctor tell me one time, he says, I'm not here to pull your child out of the game. I'm here to protect your child along the way. And I think sometimes if people get that message, that's they can hear that, you know. Or a kid that says, I used to always hear, I'm straight, I'm straight. Okay. I know you're straight. I know you're good. But let me talk to you for just a minute, and then we'll get you back in the game as quickly as possible and that. So those are little victories along the way, I think, that are positive for me.
I think the you said communicate humbly, I guess with the authority also, and then that's a lot of front end work. Like you said, going to talk to the EMS, going to talk to the school nurse, you know, like, hey, we have a somewhat established relationship before this major event, so now we can communicate a little bit more quickly, or I don't know if harsh is the right word, but just directly whenever there is some sort of event. And so again, it's just some of that front end work where you have to think and plan and set up that non-confrontational meeting first.
Right. Getting in front of their youth safety boards or their parents or their coaches in advance. And I think last year, one of our colleagues was able to get in front of the officials, for example, and just have those discussions ahead of time. And then that just creates a better positive relationship along the way.
So kind of going back to, like I said, small town Texas or wherever, you know, it's out in the country and there's not a real big support network for that. If an athletic trainer wants to kind of advocate for athletic trainers in those settings, but they're not able to provide all of those, you know, a full day Saturday coverage for pay for, you know, football or for the league baseball, that kind of thing. How do you go about managing that? Maybe you're the only athletic trainer within 50 miles.
So I've never been in that situation, so I don't know how I would handle that. Yeah, I mean the closest thing I can get in our let's we Florida has a lot of certified athletic trainers, but in our Panhandle area, heading west from 95 and out I-10, there are a lot of those rural schools, and so. And a lot of those schools are, some have full-time athletic trainers, but probably most have, excuse me, contracted athletic trainers from outreach programs. So, and they may get what we call have bag will travel, where an athletic trainer hits two or three schools, which what I did back in the early 90s, and did a circuit 2 days a week to one group of schools and a circuit 2 days a week to the other schools and that. So, don't know if I'm answering your question there, but you just have to. Athletic trainers are resourceful, organized, and need to be creative. So whatever you can create to provide the best quality of service, do it, you know. and then learn along the way and make the changes as you go forth.
All right, you mentioned rings earlier, so I imagine you wanted to talk about just all the championship rings you have. So just tell me a story too about that.
Well, we won one state championship, and I had a rule: if you put spats on, somebody put a spat on you, then you could cut it off. I wasn't to cut it off, and I told that to my the college student that I was a preceptor for. Well, she didn't listen one time, and she cut her finger real good. So, right as we won the state championship and everybody was celebrating, there she was over. I was treating her her cut finger because she didn't do what I asked her to do with that. But so the rings are fun. We won four in a row with one school I was at. Well, I was at one school for a long time, and won a couple when I was in college and working at the University of Florida through some baseball and that. And so, those are great times to celebrate, to bond with the kids. I just went to a 70s baseball reunion of the alumni, and just got a call from the head coach of the 70s football group at the University of Florida that he wants to get the people together here in our local area. So those relationships are what matter and what I value, and people that made a difference in my life and affected me in a very positive way. And that, so those mean a lot. It's nice to display those. My wife was looking at all the watches the other day. When you do basketball, you get a tournament watch from everything. And it's like, I don't even have a way to display those. But anyway, again, they collect dust, but they're great memories and that. So I'm very grateful to have been a part of that. And, again, it's been a wonderful experience throughout the many years at the college, high school, clinical. And then 13 years ago, I got downsized from a hospital. And that was actually a life-changing event. I'll tell that story real quick, just because there is always hope. And there was not the opportunity to hire older athletic trainers, and that. So anyway, I created my own business, kept the contract at the school for another 5-7 years, and then got into all these other what I call revenue streams. And with the Jacksonville Sports Medicine program, that worked. So it all worked for the good. You'll always land on your feet. And as I told the other colleague with me who got downsized at the same time, that you will land in a good place. And she did. And she's working wheelchair rugby these days. And that's her passion, with rugby and wheelchair rugby. So, all things work together for the good. So I'm grateful for that.
All right. Very good. Any final thoughts or call to actions or, just little pushes that you want to give to somebody who's thinking about looking at youth sports safety?
What I would say is be patient, stay the course, try not to be too broad out there in what you're trying to do. We can be a jack of all trades and a master of none. So it's good to find a focus or two that we can make a positive inroad to. Even if it's one policy at a year, you change, or one new thing you implement that should have been there in the first place, but you as the athletic trainer made it happen with those youth sports. So we're still learning in these areas of the younger kids, of the club sports, of the all those types of things that happen at parks. And as you know, in Florida, we're very active here. So, and outdoors, it seems like 12 months of the year. So there's always a lot of things going on, but honestly, learn to communicate, do it humbly. Humility is not weakness. Humility brings strength in a lot of things. So, and people will respect you more when you come across in a loving manner. And respectful, listen to other people, listen to what they're saying, listen to what their concerns are. Because a lot of these, with these young kids, this is the first time they've ever been injured, or the first time a parent has had to deal with an injury. So they're looking for help along the way, and their only experience may have been what they went through, and that was when Dad rubbed some dirt on it, you know, and you need a little more direction than that. So hopefully these are helpful things, and I really appreciate the opportunity to get to share today with you.
Yes, sir. So again, your podcast is Youth Sports Safety Podcast. So you can probably find that in anywhere you find podcasts, because I just Googled it real quick and it was on Apple Podcast. And so it's probably all your podcast catchers. If you want to get a hold of Jim, his email is jdmackie, M-A-C-K-I-E, at comcast.net. So you can email Jim at jdmackie at comcast.net. Again, those will be in the show notes. Or you can check out the Jackson Sports Med, which is jaxsmp.com or atsjax.com. So check out either one of those if you want to find out more about what they're doing, some of the policies and the ways that they are improving youth sports safety there in Florida. One of my partners is Hoist Hydration. I know down there in Florida, you guys are always humid and sweaty. So they do a lot of work with the military and hydrating our soldiers as they're doing all their training and stuff like that. And so if you want to check out Hoist Hydration, you can use the code DSMB or just contact them, tell them, you know, you heard about the Hoist on the podcast, and then they can get you a discount or hook up, something like that. For Jeremy Jackson, Jim Mackey, and the Sports Medicine Broadcast, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/youth-sports-safety. That is a wrap. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.